I'm Pilar Jennings, and I'm a psychoanalyst in private practice here in New York City. And the name of my new book is To Heal a Wounded Heart. And I can be reached by readers and people who would like to be in touch with me through my site, which is drpilarjennings.com.
Dr. Jennings, or should I call you Pilar?
Sure, you can call me Pilar.
Okay. To Heal a Wounded Heart, The Transformative Power of Buddhism and Psychotherapy in Action. It's about a different path that you use to in therapy to treat a six-year-old girl who had stopped talking.
It was early on in my training to become a psychoanalyst, and I was working with a variety of patients and finding, I think, like many, many beginning therapists, that everything that I had learned was both helpful and not always entirely relevant to what I felt I was needing with a particular patient. With the patient that I focus on in the book, I felt called to be creative, to find ways to help her that I may not have been trained to do. And so over time, I found myself just exploring with a supervisor and with plenty of good counsel, different ways to be helpful, different ways to show up, to address the pain and the trauma that she was enduring, to use the tools that I had learned in my training, but also to perhaps bring in some of the tools that I had been learning as a Buddhist throughout my life, since I had been practicing for many years at that time.
Would you describe a common ground between psychoanalysis and Buddhism?
Sure. I think these traditions, even though they come from very different parts of the world and different sociocultural contexts, they both have a real appreciation for the healing impact of awareness. And Freud described this as the therapist's evenly hovering attention. So when therapists can listen with an open mind, with as little judgment as possible, with as little moral judgment as possible, that it really creates an environment for people to begin to speak more openly about the truth of what they've lived through. And in Buddhism, there's a similar idea, sometimes described as bare attention, which also has this insight that when we can create an environment, either within ourselves or for another, that just holds space for someone to speak into the truth of who they are, of what they want, of what they've lived through, that spaciousness, that non-judgmental, non-reactive spaciousness is really an ideal setting for people to begin to do the hard work of getting to know themselves better.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I have gone to a few silent retreats over the past few years with the Jesuits in a monastery in one case, and with a group of Franciscan nuns. Problems are discussed with a facilitator one-on-one, using that quiet space of a silent retreat to bring everything to the fore. And I found that was really so helpful and so beautiful.
Yeah, Pat, you're exactly right. I mean, all the great faith traditions tend to try to create environments, right, both physical and mental and spiritual, where there's a sense of quiet, right, there's a sense of unhurried time, so that we can drop into what needs to be cared for. And as we both know, we're living in a time where we tend to be overstimulated, we tend to be distracted by a thousand things. And so certainly for me, I have found in Buddhism and in psychoanalysis just a very deep appreciation for how much we can discover and how much better we can feel when we're not chronically distracted.
You brought in a friend to help with the six-year-old child, Martine. How did that come about?
At the time when I was training to become an analyst, I was also working on my PhD, and so I was preparing for a Tibetan language exam. And as a result, I was getting to know my Tibetan Buddhist teacher. His name is Lama Pema Wangduk, who's also very, very passionate about the Tibetan language and was helping me prepare for this exam. And because we were spending so much time together, I was a terrible language student and very nervous about passing this exam. We were starting to develop a friendship, and he was sharing more with me about his childhood. And through that process, I discovered that he too had experienced quite a bit of trauma as a child. And because I was actively in my training and trying to understand to the best of my ability the patients that I was working with, I was also in a boundaried way sharing with him what I was experiencing in that process. And over time, I started to think about what it would be like to bring him into a session, because I was feeling with many of the children that I was working with that they needed to know that it's possible to be badly hurt in childhood and not only survive, right? Of course, we all want to survive, but even go on to live a meaningful life, a life that feels important and worthwhile. And I felt that he could model for them both the truth of our suffering, right? The truth that many of us suffer a great deal in childhood, and the truth that we have this extraordinary ability to recover and tap into gifts and capacities and live them out in adulthood.
Plus, he could be silly and straightforward as well.
Exactly. That's an important point, Pat. Yeah, right. In addition to all that serious stuff, he's hilarious. And I think for us all, but especially for kids, play and humor and levity is so important, right? We need to find the silliness in life, right? And we need to find the silliness and the ridiculousness of our suffering as well, not to minimize it. And Lama Pema is great at that. He's just naturally funny. He's naturally playful. And so it seemed like a good idea to bring him into a session and see what happens.
Did you get a lot of raised eyebrows and tut-tutting from the people around you, the adults around you? What's she doing? Why is she bringing this person in? Was there objections?
Well, I tried to be thoughtful about it. And so I took my time. I was in supervision, and I was working with a few supervisors, as we do when we're training to become analysts. And so I really thought it through, and I took time just to explore my anxiety about it, my excitement about it, and also to try to keep it as non-mysterious, as manageable as possible for this patient. And so the adults in our midst were on board, and also because Lama Pema is such a lovely person and very gentle, I think people who meet him find him to be very touching for his gentleness. I think intuitively it made sense to adults that he would be a good person to introduce to any kid, especially a kid who's suffering.
Would you tell us what happened to the child? This is a two-pronged question. Not only what happened to the child, but what happened to you as an analyst after this therapy?
Yeah. Well, I think for the child, it was a form of awakening, right? Many people know that in Buddhism there's this emphasis on enlightenment, which means in a more simple way our ability to really awaken to reality, to the truth of who we are, who we're becoming, the truth of the world that we're in, and to not be so habitually reactive against whatever we find. And so I hope that for this child, she was awakening to the reality that many of us suffer quite a bit as kids. We experience all sorts of losses, and some of them are very shocking, right? Some of them are very hard to recover from. and that there's no shame in it. It's really part of our reality. And it does not in any way sabotage or eliminate our ability to be joyful, to be powerful, to be valuable. So I think that it was a kind of awakening for her and seeing the full spectrum of experiences in Lama Pema. And I hope recognizing that, like him, she too could navigate the many difficulties she was facing. For me, I found myself reflecting quite a bit on my own childhood, and it was definitely bringing to the surface just some of the losses that felt hard to recover from, felt murky. Many of us have experiences in childhood that hover, almost like dreams, right? We sense them, but they're hard to crack open. And so I felt with them both this call to just try to learn more about what was still hovering in me from my own childhood and to try to work it through, not only for my own peace of mind, but so that I could be more available to others as they were making efforts to work through and recover from their childhood.
That was well said. How would you like to see the practice of psychotherapy change?
Well, I would like to see the tradition and the method continue to be more inclusive of our spirituality, which is not to say that it should become something that it isn't. I really appreciate that therapy is not religion and it's not a spiritual practice. But when patients go to therapists, they're looking for a sense of meaning, right? They're looking to feel lifted up and connected to something beyond themselves. And I'm basically describing what we're looking for when we go into a spiritual tradition. So I do think it would be really helpful for therapists to cultivate their own spirituality and to make some room for the spirituality of their patients. Again, doesn't mean they have to become priests or rabbis or Rinpoches in order to do that, but just to know that they're dealing with a patient's psyche, but they're also dealing with a patient's spirit. So that's one biggie. The other thing is I'd love to see in training programs a little more appreciation for the importance of cultivating compassion. And I talk about this a lot, but I think in most psychotherapy training programs, there's just the hope that therapists will be compassionate with themselves and with their patients. But there's usually no formal training to help them be compassionate. And this is really the domain of spirituality, and certainly in Buddhist tradition, there are lots of methods for helping people become more compassionate with themselves and with others. So I'd love to see some of those methods incorporated into psychotherapeutic training programs.
Well, that was well said, well done. We've been talking this morning with Dr. Pilar Jennings, author of To Heal a Wounded Heart. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Pat. It's been a pleasure talking with you.